Welcome to the Anesthesiology Journal podcast, an audio interview of study authors and editorialists.
Hello, I'm Bobby Jean Schweitzer, an associate editor for Anesthesiology, and you are listening to an anesthesiology podcast designed for physicians and scientists interested in the research that appears in our journal. Today, we are speaking with two authors of publications in the October 2021 issue of the journal. With us is Dr. Jin Tae Kim. Dr. Kim is the senior author of an article titled Smart Glasses for Radial Arterial Catheterization in Pediatric Patients, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Dr. Kim is professor in the Department of Anesthesiology and Pain Medicine, Seoul National University Hospital, Seoul National University College of Medicine, in Seoul, Republic of Korea. Welcome, Dr. Kim.
Thank you for having me. I'm privileged to be invited.
And joining Dr. Kim is Dr. Jorge A. Galvez. Dr. Galvez, along with others, wrote an accompanying editorial, Augmenting the Anesthesiologist Cockpit with Head-Mounted Displays for Image-Guided Procedures. Are we there yet? Dr. Galvez is the Kugler von der Vecht Professor of Pediatric Anesthesiology and serves as Vice Chair of Pediatric Anesthesiology in the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, as well as Division Chief of Pediatric Anesthesiology at the Children's Hospital and Medical Center in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome, Dr. Galvez.
Good day. I'm honored to join you in this conversation from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, let's start with you, Dr. Kim. I suggest that maybe you can explain to our listeners what exactly are smart glasses.
Okay, the word of smart glasses may remind you of the Tony Stark Edis, which are smart glasses in the movie film Spider-Man Far From Home. The device is a very powerful device, but simply, smart glasses are wearable computer glasses that add any visual information alongside or to what the wearer sees. I think that smart glasses can do anything that your smartphone can do depending on the device.
So in this study, what did you compare the use of these smart glasses for radial arterial catheterization to?
We compared the use of smart glasses for radial artery catheterization to conventional ultrasound-guided radial artery catheterization. In the conventional ultrasound group, each operator adjusted the location of the ultrasound screen and the height of the surgical table for the most comfortable posture during the procedure.
And can you tell us a bit more about the population that you enrolled?
Yes, we included pediatric patients younger than 2 years of age, scheduled for elective surgery under general anesthesia, who required invasive artery blood pressure monitoring or blood sampling. Patients with a recent history of radial artery puncture, wound, infection, hematomas, peripheral vascular disease, insufficient collateral circulation, and unstable vital signs were excluded from this study.
Dr. Galvez, how small are the radial arteries typically in a child younger than 2 years of age?
That's a great question. You know, the range really varies, obviously, depending on the location, also the age of the child, which some kids are failure to thrive and could even be smaller, particularly in the congenital cardiac population. But there's been recent publications in anesthesiology by Dr. Kim et al., in 2017, that does document range of about 1.5 millimeters for the radial artery in the population they studied. And those kids were around 13 months of age. That's consistent with what I see in my practice, typically anywhere in the 1 to 3 millimeter, maybe, if you have a larger kid.
Pretty small. Dr. Kim, did you randomize the patients or randomize the providers who were placing the arterial lines?
Yeah, of course, we randomized the patient for the allocation of the group, but we did not randomize four providers who were placing the arterial lines.
And what were the aims of your study?
The purpose of this study was to determine if the use of smart glasses would increase the first attempt success rate of the radial artery catheterization compared with the conventional ultrasound-guided catheterization in small pediatric patients.
Dr. Galvez, do we know what the typical success rates are for first attempt radial arterial catheterizations in children of this age and size?
Again, that's a very variable question because it will depend on a lot of factors, including the individual skill of the person attempting the cannulation, as well as patient-specific factors such as any kind of connective tissue disorders that are not uncommon in this population and could further complicate it. There are published studies that in experienced hands, they quote a success of 60 to 80% on the first attempt. Again, I've been working at several institutions doing this with many kids, and I think the other question that always comes to mind is how do you define first attempt? Is it when the needle comes in and if you make one pass but don't come out of the skin, does that still count as one attempt or the second time that you're passing? And so I think, you know, there's a lot of gray area there, and some people will use that in more looser terms. But in this age group, they're not easy. I think we can all agree on that.
And we're talking about even with ultrasound guided. These are the kind of typical numbers.
Correct. As an anecdote, just this morning, I was called to assist with an arterial line placement on a three-month-old, and they had been attempting for about 45 minutes by the time that they called me, and that was with ultrasound and with very skilled providers and everything else. It's, you know, unfortunately, we find ourselves in these situations more often than we would all like.
Mm-hmm. No, I think arterial lines can be challenging even in much larger people, bigger, you know, adults. They can be humbling. So, Dr. Kim, in addition to success rate, did you also look at, for example, specific complications in the two groups?
Yes, we assessed the general complication associated with the arterial catheterization, which were vasospasm, hematoma, distal ischemia, or catheter malfunction. Vasospasm and hematoma were evaluated using ultrasound, and catheter malfunction was evaluated by the arterial pressure waveform and difficulty of blood aspiration.
A little bit more, I think, explanation about these smart glasses. I know, you know, it's too bad we don't have pictures we can show people, but if you can help us understand, does the ultrasound image, as you're looking at these with the glasses on, does it appear projected in front of your eyes, or does it actually look like it's projected on the patient's arm?
Actually, the smart glasses we used do not have a projector function. It just displays the ultrasound screen right in front of your operator eyes, not over the patient arm.
Got it. So I guess the difference is that when you move your head, the image moves with you as opposed to having to look across at the ultrasound screen itself.
Yes.
Got it. So does this image at all, when you're trying to look through it now and onto the patient's arm, does it obscure the patient's arm itself?
As I told you before, the ultrasound image is displayed on the smart glasses, and the actual arm of the patient can be seen just under the ultrasound image. Basically, the ultrasound image and the procedure field can be seen simultaneously. Just a little eyeball movement may be needed to focus on ultrasound image and the patient arm. But technically, the ultrasound image does not obscure the procedure field.
Thank you. I think that really helped me better understand what is really happening with these glasses and the providers. Dr. Galvez, in your editorial, I think you write about the distinction between head-mounted displays and augmented reality devices. Can you help us understand the difference, and what type of device was used in this study?
Absolutely. So following up on the last question, you know, the distinction between the two, for augmented reality devices, typically the device will overlay some type of information onto the real world that we experience. And a lot of our smartphones currently can be used as an augmented reality device. There's a lot of games or applications, even the camera that we use now will put emoji faces or alter people's faces when you're pointing the camera. You're augmenting or changing, somehow modifying the image that is being processed. And then, the image may look as if that's the way that it is. If you're imagining that on a head-mounted display or glasses, you know, there are a couple of these that are commercially available, and they may end up functioning along the lines of what you just described. So, for example, with an augmented reality head-mounted display, you could take a square image, so similar to a computer web browser. So you might think of your internet browser window that you can just move around, but instead of moving it on the actual monitor, you could literally put it wherever you want in the room, and they can be configured so that you can just pin it right to that spot so that it stays put, if you will. And if you were to walk around it and look at the place where you pinned it, you would see it. And you might stand behind it and then see it backwards, as if you were looking at the screen from the back. And as you come around the front, you'll see it again from the front. Or you could not pin them. You can have them float and put it somewhere in your field of view so that it sort of follows you as you're walking around navigating an area. So those tend to be more sophisticated devices in terms of the computing power. The smart glasses, when we talk about in the editorial, we define them as, I believe is in the study, is essentially a pair of glasses that has a computer display that will project an image that is sent to it. So, but within the glasses field of view, so there's no image that other people can see. The only person who can see it is the person who's wearing the glasses from their point of view. And you could connect it to any video source. In this case, investigators used an ultrasound device, but you could also connect it to a computer or to a monitor and, you know, watch any other image on the field of view. My understanding, and Dr. Kim, you can clarify, that in this case, the ultrasound image is fixed in your field. So if you were looking under the drapes or navigating around the bed, it doesn't really matter where the ultrasound device is because the image is available to you within your field of view.
So, Dr. Kim, did the providers wearing the smart glasses also have a view of the ultrasound image on the machine, or were they just restricted to using the smart glasses for that image?
The providers were restricted to just smart glasses image connected with an ultrasound machine. In the smart glasses group, the ultrasound machine was located behind the operator to remove the distraction, and the operator was not allowed to see the ultrasound machine screen during the procedure.
Got it. So, Dr. Galvez, are there other publications that have assessed the use of these smart glasses?
There's most certainly a growing body of evidence assessing various types of augmented reality displays and smart glasses. The technology is evolving very, very quickly. And honestly, as soon as somebody publishes something on one device, there's a good chance that there may be a new one in the market already. I have not found too many with this specific device.
So Dr. Kim, in regards to your primary aim, did the smart glasses compared to routine ultrasound use help providers be more successful on the first arterial catheter attempt?
Absolutely. The primary endpoint was the first attempt success rate of radial artery cannulation. Based on our data, the smart glasses group had a higher first attempt success rate than the control group. In this study, we used in-plane long-axis approach for arterial catheterization. I think that in-plane long-axis approach requires more delicate hand-eye coordination compared with the short-axis out-of-plane approach. In the long-axis approach, the probe needle and target artery must exactly align for successful cannulation. Smart glasses are helpful for aligning the probe and needle in the procedure field while aligning the needle and the target artery on the ultrasound screen at the same time.
And I think you also looked at procedure times and even second attempt success rates in both groups. How did those compare?
The procedure time to the first attempt success rate was shorter in smart glass group. The overall procedure time also shorter in smart glasses group. And then the second attempt success rate was higher in the smart glasses group than in the control group.
It sounds like there was an advantage to those smart glasses. Was there a difference between groups in complications and or catheter malfunction during the case?
Yes, the overall complication rate, including vasospasm and hematoma, was lower in the smart glasses group than in the control group. And catheter malfunction occurred in 6 of the 58 patients in the control group, whereas 0 in the smart glasses group.
Dr. Galvez, is there a likely identifiable reason or reasons that using smart glasses would result in fewer complications and a higher rate of functionality of an intra-arterial catheter?
I think that's an excellent question. It's very difficult to consider that. Getting down to, you know, if you're successful on the first attempt, you know, the less instrumentation that each of these vessels encounters, you know, if perhaps the way that the needle is inserted or the technique, you know, changes in very subtle ways that are very difficult to study. But I think in order to really answer that question, you likely need to have much bigger study size and a design specifically to address that question. I think, you know, the nuances might be very, very subtle.
So Dr. Kim, were these providers doing this, involved in this study, were they already skilled at using ultrasound to place arterial catheters?
Yes, all providers were familiar with ultrasound-guided arterial cannulation in pediatric patients. They are all pediatric anesthesiologists, and they have experienced more than 100 ultrasound-guided arterial cannulation in pediatric patients.
And had they had prior experience using head-mounted displays such as these smart glasses? And if not, what training did they receive for this?
Actually, all operator had no experience of using this head-mounted display for ultrasound-guided arterial catheterization before planning the present study. However, the function of the smart glasses in this study was simply displaying the ultrasound screen in front of the operator eyes. And all operator are expert of ultrasound-guided arterial catheterization. So simple training was done about basic operation methods such as turning on the power of the smart glasses, connecting the smart glasses with ultrasound machine, wearing smart glasses, and checking the focus. In addition, all operators had a self-training time, about 10 minutes, for needle manipulation on Blue Phantom with this head-mounted display on. I think that the expert who is familiar with ultrasound-guided arterial cannulation does not need intensive training or need only simple training to get used to it.
Well, that's an advantage. I think you also looked at the ergonomic satisfaction, as written in your paper, of the providers using these smart glasses. Can you maybe explain to me and our listeners what exactly is ergonomics and what you were trying to measure in this specific study?
Absolutely. Basically, the ergonomic is the process of designing or arranging workplace products and system so that they fit the people who use them. The device and environment can be designed for people to work in the most physiologic and comfortable posture and condition. We recorded the operator's ergonomic satisfaction on a 5-scale to assess musculoskeletal fatigue during the procedure. For example, 1 is worst, the procedure was halted because of musculoskeletal pain or very hard to obtain hand-eye coordination and alignment. 2 is poor, the procedure was prolonged because of the musculoskeletal discomfort or poor hand-eye coordination and alignment. 3 is acceptable, and 4 is good. The procedure was done with less musculoskeletal discomfort and better hand-eye coordination and alignment. And lastly, 5 is best. The procedure was successful with minimal musculoskeletal discomfort and significantly enhanced hand-eye coordination and alignment.
Dr. Galvez, why is ergonomic satisfaction important for anesthesiologists, and especially as relates to doing invasive procedures? Is it that we'll be more successful, or that we just won't end up with neck and head and musculoskeletal problems later in life?
I have to say that this was probably one of my favorite aspects of this study, that they addressed this. Certainly, the longevity of our careers, it will be impacted by our avoidance of workplace injuries. And so anything that we can do to optimize that, I think, is certainly well worthwhile in its own pursuit. Going back to my training, I had the honor and privilege to train with Dr. Paul Barish. And one of the things that he always said, particularly around arterial lines, not even on pediatrics, but just not to take any shortcuts and make sure that the setup, that you were comfortable and everything was arranged just so. And I have to say that that's what I do every single time I'm working on arterial lines on these little kids. I take more time positioning the patient, putting everything so that I don't have to bend over, I don't have to look kind of behind me for the ultrasound or anything like that. And honestly, that probably takes me, I mean, I'm familiar with how to do this, and it still takes me a good 5 to 10 minutes sometimes, even when I have the whole room set up ahead of time, just to get it just right. If you get the ergonomics right, doing the procedure itself becomes much easier. You know, if the ergonomics are not right, then you're basically climbing a mountain. You're making it harder for yourself. And honestly, this may actually potentially explain why the catheters are more successful. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Kim, first, I don't think I've asked, but if you wear glasses for vision, can you put these smart glasses over those?
The smart glasses can wear over your glasses. It's no problem at all.
Thank you. Did providers find these glasses easy to use?
Yes. Our provider told me that these smart glasses are easy to use. Of course, I am of the same opinion. However, the device we used was not wireless and need to be connected to the ultrasound machine with a cable. This preparation may be some hassle, but during the procedure, I think it is helpful and easy to use.
But Dr. Galvez, I think you actually wrote a bit in your editorial about that issue, whether it's connected with a cable or wireless Bluetooth, and maybe addressed some of the, you know, delay in image, you know. Can you speak to that a bit?
Absolutely. I think that, again, technology is continuing to advance, but in terms of image transmission, wired connections are still better than wireless connections, particularly for medical grade imaging. And depending on what the image is being used for, if it's an image being obtained for diagnostic purposes where you're not doing a procedure, slight delays in the image refresh rate or the projection may be acceptable. But in the case where we're doing a procedure, those delays would have to be taken into consideration. It may be something that we can compensate for. You know, if we look at even just the evolution of traditional ultrasounds, you know, the latest generation devices have very fast image refresh rates, whereas, you know, a device that was even 5 years old may have a noticeably slower refresh rate and may have delays that are not acceptable if you're used to using one of the newer devices. So I think this is one of those things that just needs to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis with the specific configuration that is available. But, you know, some of the ergonomic benefits that we discussed previously, you know, you have to still take into consideration that the glasses are attached to something. And as anesthesiologists, you know, we do have to walk around the OR table sometimes abruptly, and our ability to move around, I think that that part needs to be considered, just as far as, you know, if you had to tether yourself to a device, even if it's only for a specific procedure.
Dr. Kim, what type of situations do you see these smart glasses having particular advantages?
Thank you for asking. I think ocular catheterization for pediatric patients is a good indication for smart glasses. In addition, I would like to mention the clinically useful situations. During surgery, we sometimes encounter some situation that sudden arterial or intravenous catheter malfunction occur, or unexpected unstable vital sign that require invasive blood pressure monitoring or massive fluid resuscitation. However, when such cardiac already covered the small pediatric patient during surgery, or when some other instrument have already occupied the space, it is quite difficult to assess the cannulation site and to place the ultrasound machine where the operator can see during the vascular procedure. In our clinical experience, smart glasses can be an attractive option in urgent bedside procedure in the operating room, even under the surgical drip, because they can project the ultrasound screen just in front of the operator eyes without the limit of space or interruption of the operator views. For example, you can see the ultrasound screen while you are performing ultrasound-guided vascular procedure under the surgical dress. So it is very attractive options.
Yeah, I can see where that would be the case. As Dr. Galvez says, we're often having to crawl around and underneath and around things. Well, I hope today's discussion will interest many of our listeners and lead you to read these important articles to learn more. Thank you, Drs. Kim and Galvez, for discussing your work with us today. I wish you well as you continue your efforts to enhance the practice of anesthesiology and strive to improve the care of our patients.
You've been listening to the Anesthesiology Journal Podcast, the official peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Check anesthesiology.org for an archive of this podcast and other related content.